you worked hard to bring investments into the city as we recovered from Hurricane Katrina. And some of those investments came in the form of federal grants from FEMA. And some of that money was used to do things like rebuild St. Rock Market, which is an upscale restaurant space in the Bywater. So looking back, do you still see investments like these as being wise, even when they sometimes had a polarizing effect on the neighborhood?
Well, I would disagree that it was polarizing. I was a kid in the St. Rock Market and remember what it looked like. And that's one of the best reflections. It's not really an upscale market. It's a market that took an old building, put it back into mint condition, has created a lot of small businesses. But yeah, you can't build anything in this city without a lot of partnerships. And the federal, state, and local funds, as well as philanthropic money, were critically important. And we've built over 300 wonderful reconstruction projects like that, and the city is a lot better off because of it.
And one of your biggest accomplishments has really been improving the real estate market here in the city through encouraging private investment. We've seen areas like the CBD boom. But the lack of affordable housing has also become a huge problem, with many desirable neighborhoods becoming increasingly more expensive and also overrun with Airbnb properties. So what could you have done?
Well, you made that sound really bad. Let me put that in context for you. When we took over the city had 40,000 blighted properties. People were moving out. We had no jobs. Now what we do is we have a city that's robust, an economy that went from having an 8.5 unemployment rate down to 4.7, which means more people are working. We invested in neighborhoods. Everybody's real estate values went up. Now, when people start moving back into the city, it creates a different kind of problem that's not nearly as bad as the problem we first had. And so what you have to do is make sure that in your zoning, you do inclusionary zoning, and you make sure that your economy is such that everybody gets a chance to participate. But it's far better off than it was 8 years ago.
So you feel like you have fostered the growth of affordable housing in the city?
Well, you have to do both, obviously. You can't do one without the other. I mean, the individuals that are actually doing the work in the city have to be able to live in the city. It's just that mayors are confronted with different kinds of problems. 40,000 blighted properties because people left and left trash here is a whole lot different problem than you're having from not having enough places to live because everybody wants to move back in the city. So you have to do both of them, but I wouldn't trade one for the other. In other words, you got to do both of them at the same time.
You've also really championed racial equality as one of your primary goals, following in the footsteps of your father, Moon Landrieu, who integrated City Hall. But in your 8 years as mayor, black incarceration rates have remained high, black homeownership has remained low, and black households continue to earn about 60% less than their white counterparts, according to this recent report by the Data Center. So what could you have done differently to address some of those inequities?
Well, first of all, there was no way that you were going to move any of those numbers dramatically in a short period of time. What we have done is completely changed the framework so that those numbers are actually going to go down dramatically over the next couple of years. And we did that by dealing with foundational issues. Criminal justice reform was something that we have worked really hard at. The police department now is a lot better than it was, and citizen satisfaction is now at 73%. It was 22% when we got here. We also have not only worked with the disparity study, but we actually paid for it. And we paid for it because we wanted to know directly what the answer is, which is why we've created a whole bunch of programs, jobs training programs, so that we could make sure that we took individuals that were not working and lined them up with people who had work and then trained them to do that. So we've reduced the unemployment rate from 52% down to 41%. Now, otherwise, historically, it has been going in the other direction. The same thing with incarceration rates. We've reduced the number of individuals in parish prison by over half. And so all of those things are trending in the right direction, but we don't live in isolation. We live in the context of the state of Louisiana and the United States of America. So we feel like we've done a lot of work in that area. We think we've already made some great success. We think it's going to pay dividends in the future.
So let's talk about that a little. Crime has remained a top concern in the city, even though the murder rate has dropped. And the city remains one of the most deadly in the nation.
Yeah, but don't pass that up too fast. The murder rate dropped to the lowest it's been since 1970. See, that's a dramatic increase. That's not just a footnote, oh, the murder dropped. But we spent a huge amount of time on the violence on the streets of New Orleans and have made great progress because we made some great institutional changes.
Sure, and programs like NOLA for Life.
Correct.
And through addressing gangs directly.
Correct.
But you've also talked about how existing frameworks for fighting crime are inadequate. So if you had all the money and political support in the world, how would your strategy have been different?
Well, it wouldn't have been different. It would have been a lot more of what we did. So NOLA for Life, for example, fundamentally was a different approach. In other words, we started to say that violence was a public health threat, not just a public safety threat. Why did we say that? Public safety threat means hire more police. They run and gun. They go arrest everybody. They put them in jail. No, we said, no, that's not what our view of public safety is. We're actually going to make sure that the police protect and serve. We're going to have a police department that understands community policing. They're going to be smarter and better about use of force, et cetera. However, on top of that, you've got a public health issue. So think about violence like you would think about a virus or a sickness, and how you would do research on that, and how you would stop it from transmitting, and how deep the dive has to be in order to fix it. And then finally, it's an economic opportunity problem. So now you've got to have job training. So we went all in. The challenge is that these problems have been so entrenched for so many generations, you can't expect to get out of them soon. And you can't expect to get out of them all if you don't put massive resources in all of them. So I would really like quadruple down on the strategy that we used, and then do it for year over year. So for example, the Harlem Children's Zone in New York, they tracked people from the day they were born until they went to college. So it took 20 years in order to take that child through the entirely new system that you built in order to see meaningful results. This is how long the investment on this has to be. And I think it's something that I'm actually going to stay involved in. I will continue to work on violence reduction, you know, in years to come.
Let's talk about some other elements of that plan. You know, now we have these hundreds of crime cameras across the city as part of your public safety initiative. And the ACLU has criticized that move, saying that it's not good for public trust. Do you have any data yet to show the effectiveness of these cameras?
Well, I think that's kind of silly. I don't necessarily get in a fight with the ACLU all the time, because their mandate, which is to protect people's privacy, is important. But generally, that's where you would have a reasonable expectation of privacy. When you're on the streets, you're in a public space, and the Constitution has always been really clear about this, that you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy when you're in public spaces. We have to make sure that we're living in the reality that we're living in, and we have massive numbers of terrorist threats, homeland security threats. Those cameras are strategically located to make sure that everybody is safe. So I don't agree with the premise of the ACLU on this particular issue.
But do we know how effective they are yet?
Well, you can't disprove a negative at the moment, which is, well, the cameras are up and no crimes are happening, so are they causally related? I can tell you this, that they absolutely help us apprehend individuals who commit a crime who we can see on the cameras. So yeah, they're very useful and very helpful. But again, you want to make sure that they're where they're supposed to be and not where they're not supposed to be. Whether or not you're violating the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable search and seizure has to do with things being on private property, not in public spaces. And as part of making sure that the entire community stays safe from the kinds of threats that cities like ours have, and you have to use technology tools to make sure that you can either stop crimes for being committed, or when they are committed, you apprehend the people who did it, so you can, you know, they can be met with the justice that they deserve.
All right, let's talk about the monuments a little bit. How do you think that removing the Confederate monuments here in New Orleans affected the nation's perception of you?
Well, I don't know what their perception of was before, and it wasn't done for people to perceive me nationally any differently. It was designed so that the city, as it got ready for its 300th anniversary, conducted itself in a way that was consistent with what we have been in the past. And those monuments, in my opinion, did not reflect who the people of the city of New Orleans ever were or ever wanted to be. And so I spoke to this. The fact that it became a national issue has nothing to do with me thinking, oh, I'm going to give a speech that's going to get national attention. It meant that what I said in New Orleans and what's happening in New Orleans has some kind of connection to what people are experiencing all over the country, which is to say that if we're struggling with it in New Orleans and the rest of the country picked up with it, this is not just our issue. And this is an issue that the country has to deal with in a really serious way. And I think we show them a pathway of how to do that in a nonviolent way.
You are continuing to face some criticism for the move here at home.
That's not a big surprise. Everything I do gets criticized.
You may have seen, I know you were at Jazz Fest this weekend, someone flew a banner over the festival saying Landrieu's legacy bought cranes instead of fixing drains. So what's your response to this criticism that you prioritized removing the monuments over fixing the
infrastructure? Well, I feel bad for that person. I'm leaving office in 5 days. They wasted a lot of money. I have no idea what their intention was, but God bless them. But essentially, we've rebuilt the entire city. We're building a new airport. We're building a new riverfront. We've built a whole bunch of new schools. We rebuilt healthcare clinics, recreation clinics, and we took the monuments down too. We did everything. We filled 485,000 potholes. We cleaned all the drains. We fixed the power source at the Sewage and Water Board. That is all silly stuff about, I hate him for that. I'm going to beat him up no matter what he does. I'll never get him credit because I'm just mad because Robert E. Lee was my great uncle and blah, 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 whatever. it just is one of those things. Some people are never going to let go. I'm happy for it to be that way. There are some people that are just completely disagree with it, and they're going to have their opinion. I'm going to have mine. But as the mayor of the city of New Orleans, I exercised my authority to do what I knew the people of the city wanted to do, and that's what leadership is about.
You've also faced some criticism from local activists. In a Medium post last week, you may have seen Michael Questmore, who's known as a scribe called Quest, essentially said that you usurped their movement to remove the monuments for your own political gain. So what's your response to those criticisms?
I just find that really curious. You know, everything I've said since I've been mayor is that haven't done anything on my own, and everything that I've done has been on the shoulders of other people. This conversation started with me in 2014 with Wenton Marcellus. And what I don't understand about that is I don't know why they can't take yes for an answer. They asked the city to remove the monuments. We removed the monuments. People ask me why we removed the monuments and what I write about it. So I did it. So I'm not trying to usurp anything. I completely and have always embraced not only Take 'Em Down NOLA, but all of the people for many, 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 many years who did heroic work from the day that I was born all the way through it. Write about it, talk about it, give people credit for it, and that's all. I just wish everybody could take yes for an answer. It was a great thing that we did together, so let's be happy about it.
So perhaps your vision was that removing those monuments would be the legacy of your
administration. No, that was not my vision.
Okay.
That didn't have anything to do with my having to want to create. My legacy has been leading the city during one of the greatest rebuildings in American history. We rebuilt a broken city together. We did something that the rest of the country never thought that we could do. And this city is measurably better off because of it. The monuments, from my perspective, are a very small piece of the hundreds of other things that we did. It's an important piece, not only for the city, but now for the country, because race is a critical issue that we haven't really thought about as well as we should have and don't know how to talk about really well.
But let's talk about some of the ongoing infrastructure challenges that we do still face.
Sure.
Here, you know, after the...
Well, you got a ton of them because the city's 300 years old.
Well, I want to ask about drainage in particular.
Sure.
So, you know, after the city's drainage system failed last summer, kind of highlighting some systemic...
The city system did not fail last summer. It failed 50 years ago. And it got beat to death after Katrina. What happened last summer was that we had a storm. It was a historic storm. It was a 100-year flood. 5 to 9 inches dropped on the city in a small area of the city in a short period of time. The next time that happens, the city is going to get challenged too. What happened was is that the power sources that are aching to have in a car with 400,000 miles on them crashed is essentially what happened. And since that time, we've fixed them.
But it did leave people feeling vulnerable. I live in Mid-City myself. I was out there canoeing my neighbor's home.
I got bad news for you. If you live in the city of New Orleans and you don't feel vulnerable after the hundreds of storms that we had and after Katrina, you're not thinking right. This city is one of the most vulnerable cities in the country for major storms, tornadoes, et cetera, et cetera. And if people have an expectation that we're not going to get wet or we're not going to have water, that's an unreasonable expectation. What the citizens can and should expect if they invest in it is a robust drainage system that can help us. And what we have is we have a system that's older than Calvin Coolidge and older than Roosevelt, and it has to be replaced, and we need the money to do it, and we don't have the money to do it right now, and that's going to be one of the challenges. The fact that it crashed on August 5th is an awful. That was a bad day for all of us. But people shouldn't get fixated on, well, the reason that crashed is because there was a bad person at the Sewage and Water Board. It crashed because it's old. We haven't put money in it. We've deferred the maintenance for 50 years, and now we can't walk past it anymore.
But what I'd really like to ask is, you know, whether we're prioritizing the spending of, you know, FEMA money, for example, on infrastructure in the right way. Now we have this $2 billion coming from FEMA for capital improvements. And
the answer to that question is yes. We are absolutely prioritizing it because you can't use FEMA money for whatever you want.
But shouldn't we be putting some of the resilient infrastructure that we've talked about so much and, you know, laid out in the Greater New Orleans Living with Water Plan into implementation with this new, this capital improvement?
But we are doing that. $2.3 billion is now being spent in $450 million increments to repatch all of the holes in the pipes and the water. That's what that money was for. You can't take that money and put it in a new account and spend it on something that the people of the city of New Orleans have the financial responsibility for. So we've gotten $14.6 billion to redo the levees, which we've done. We've gotten the $2.3 billion in reimbursement to fix what Katrina broke. And now we personally have got to go raise the money to fix the power engines. Now, I am able to use some of that money And actually, we've been reorganizing the sewage and water board for 8 years. So if you go out to the power plant, you'll see us building two big water towers that are supposed to be designed to help us with the boil water advisors. We were able to spend money on that. But you can't just take some FEMA money from one bank account and put it into the next, or the federal government will come take it back from you. So essentially what I've been telling the people of the city is we raised sewer rates and water rates when I first got here. That money has been used for the sewer and water system, but the drainage system it's tied to it, but it's separate financially. You have to raise the money here from the citizens of New Orleans to fix that plant.
But shouldn't we be doing innovative things like using pervious pavement instead of asphalt and like bendable pipes that can move around as the ground shifts?
Yes, all of that stuff is being investigated now. When we can, we'll be able to do that. Because you do have to move from, aside from the new kind of power source that you're going to buy, you've got to move from the kind of power, whether you're going to generate it or buy it, whether it's 25 cycle or 60 cycle, whether or not you're actually going to design a system to live with water. So there's a big price tag attached to that. So for example, one of the requests that people have, David Wagner's been leading this about living with water, you actually should be building more canals in the city rather than not having canals, because that's where the water can go. When you have more places for water to go, you don't put as much strain on power. The challenge with that is, of course, because every good idea has great challenge, is that idea costs a lot more money than another idea. And so what's going to have to happen is all of the technical experts are going to have to come up with four or five different options with price tags attached to them. And then we, the people of the city, are going to have to decide what it is that we want to pay for and then how we're going to pay for it.
It just seems like the CELA project, for example, goes against everything that we know about living with water, in that it's just giant pipes to get the water out. And we know that that's contributed to us sinking.
To a certain extent, yes. That's a good point that you can make. But those projects have been 30 years in design. That's not just something.
Why build them just because we have the federal money to build them at this point?
Well, but this has nothing to do with Katrina. This started 30 years ago. So again, you'd have to stop all of that, turn it all the way around, and then move forward. Do you have another 60 years to do it? So good planning and thoughtful planning has to go into it. It turns out now, after post-Katrina, our eyes are open to a lot more things than we had before, that maybe that wasn't the best design. And so now we've got to think about new system design and how you protect us. We've got coastal erosion that we're dealing with too. So it's really going to take us, discipline to step back, look at what the new system design ought to be, and then find the money to actually do it.
I guess the question I'm getting at is, do you feel you've done enough to push the federal government to support a progressive approach here to living with water?
Well, I've done everything I can, but pushing the federal government is like beating your head up against the wall. But yes, I think that we've worked really, really hard on it, but actually turning that battleship around just is really, really difficult and takes a lot of time.
Could you have passed taxes or millages to support stormwater management and green infrastructure like other cities are doing, like Philadelphia?
Well, yes, but remember where we were when we got here. So we had a lot of other things that were really, really immediate. We had to do something for the firefighters' pension. We had to do something to save the libraries. We had to do something for all of that kind of stuff. We had to raise sewer fees and water fees after we cut a huge amount out of the budget. And so you can't always go back all the time asking for more. You have to balance that off with trying to keep the city financially sound. So going forward, I would just say that one of the, top-of-the-line priorities going forward is figuring out this sewer, water, and drainage piece and resiliency going forward. We generated, as you said, $2.3 billion new dollars. That's massively important. We generated another $300 million to fix what was going on at the sewage and water board. We generated another $140 million for the resiliency plan. Now what's got to happen is you got to take all of those resources and focus them and make sure your system design is good so that we actually keep people safer than we have been. But I want to be really clear with the people of New Orleans. There should never be a zero expectation that you're not going to get wet. Our history is that we get wet all the time. We just have to learn how to live with water better and to be stronger and to be able to recover faster when bad things happen. They've always happened. They're going to continue to happen. And we just have to keep getting better at it.
So maybe people need to change their attitudes a little bit about having water in their streets.
It's always awful. But when I was 18 years old, in May of 1978, my house got 5 feet of water in it. And I can remember my entire life when we have massive amounts of rain in a short period of time, the city getting wet. There's almost no engineering way to actually stop that from happening. So I'm not telling people deal with it. What I'm saying is your expectation should never be that you're never going to get wet. And because we have always gotten wet, you can always get better, but it's always related to how much of the risk are you willing to buy down. So we have a $14.6 billion levee system, but it only protects us from a Category 3 storm. If you want to be protected from a Category 5 or 6 storm, you have to find $60 billion. The money has to come from someplace. It's either going to come from the federal government, the state government, or it's going to come from the local government. All of that comes from taxpayers, so it's all a balancing act, and you have to work through it.
And the rain will keep coming from above, too, as we know, and probably more of it in coming years.
Well, let me give you an example of that. Last year, not long after our storm, Houston got a dramatic amount of water. Now, that water actually came down directly. It didn't get pushed into. It came down directly. When something like that happens in a major city like Houston, you know, they got flooded, and they got hurt really badly. Florida got hurt. Puerto Rico got destroyed. We've had our own examples of us. Katrina wasn't the first storm that we ever had. We had Camille, we had Betsy. All of it, it goes back. And so we just have to get better at preparing ourselves for what's coming our way, recovering faster, and making smart decisions. You can't do it with old, tired infrastructure, and it costs money to rebuild infrastructure.
Looking back, what would you say your single biggest accomplishment has been in office?
Well, I don't really see it that way. In terms of a specific thing that we built, we rebuilt the entire city. We found the will and the way to get people focused on common ground and have physically rebuilt the city, stopped it from falling off of a cliff, or in financially better position than the city has ever been in our history. People are moving back into the city now, which means we're an ascendant city, and the rest of the country is looking at us as a laboratory for innovation and change. That is the big success. That's the big success. We've had mistakes throughout the year you've alluded to. At August 5th was probably the worst day, you know, that we had. That was a tough day and a hard day. But, you know, you take the good with the bad. I think it's mostly been good.
And you talk a lot about how much you value and love New Orleans' unique and colorful culture. So how have your policies and investments, you know, encouraged that over your tenure?
Well, it was all, again, that's really important, what you said, is to understand that New Orleans' value is in her diversity. And diversity doesn't mean taking black and white and making it gray. What it means is making sure that each fabric, you know, that's woven into this mosaic that we have is rich and bright, and that we celebrate that. And everything that I've done in terms of culture, in art, in music, in economic development has been designed to give life to that view. And I think that the city is just in a lot better shape than it was, because we all have kind of come together and done really, really hard things that are going to benefit everybody in the city for a long time to come.
So I read your book, and it details your family's long political history and your deeply held beliefs regarding racial equality. But I couldn't help but feel that the book was not really intended for me or for my fellow New Orleanians. It kind of felt like the groundwork for a run for higher office. And so here's the point in the interview where I have to ask you the question.
But that's not why the book was written. And I'm sorry that you took it that way. That book was really just a reflection of where I had been in my life and how I got to the decision to take down the monuments. The book really, it didn't get to the monuments till page 167. The book was really about race in America. It wasn't laying the groundwork for anything. It was just an explanation of who I was, where I came from, why I did what I did, so that people can clearly understand it. And to say, after you read that book, well, it's no big surprise that he chose to take the monuments down. Anybody who knows anything about him would tell you that when he would be confronted with that issue, even though he didn't think of it himself, that he was going to choose that pathway. That should not be a surprise to anybody who's grown up with me and known anybody in my family.
So your answer is no, you're not running for president.
I'm not running for president.
Okay. Your dad told you after you were elected that now you own every pothole in the city. So what advice have you given LaToya Cantrell as she prepares to enter office?
Well, she hasn't asked me for any advice, so I haven't given it to her. My father, you know, was speaking to me as a son, not as a co-mayor. The mayor-elect and I have a great relationship. We have had a really smooth transition. My team has given her team everything that they possibly needed, and she's ready to take over the city. I'm sure she's going to do well.
All right. Thank you so much, Mayor Mitch Lander.
Great. Thank you.